Members, I'd like to bring the Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Committee to order. Representative Scott, could you move the minutes from our last meeting?
I'd like to move the minutes from, where's the date on there? Yes, I'll move the minutes.
March 8th, Representative Scott.
Thanks for the help there.
Representative Scott moves the minutes of the March 8th meeting discussion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Minutes are adopted. First, we're going to hear from Representative Torkelson, House File 2634, and then we are going to do the lands bill after that. Representative Hancock, I believe, is upstairs doing a bill in another committee, so we may need a little bit of flexibility today on the schedule, but we should be able to get through both bills. Representative Hancock, to your bill, I believe its motion is to pass and go to GovOps. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Representative Torkelson, and I'm proud to be part of the Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Committee. I would like to move House File 2634 to be passed out of this committee and moved on to GovOps.
Representative Torkelson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2634 deals with subsurface sewage treatment systems. It really represents an ongoing effort between the counties and PCA to make this system of SSTS a little bit more user-friendly. I have testifiers here from PCA and the Association of Minnesota Counties to testify, and I'm not sure who wants to go first. Counties, apparently.
Ms. Garlitz, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Anna Lee Garlitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Last year, I came before you all to ask for an extension on the SSTS system, adoption of ordinances. And we wanted to be able to not only give counties a little bit more time to adopt those ordinances, but also to have some time to talk to the Pollution Control Agency to try to identify ways to get a little bit more flexibility in the program for some counties that had identified some areas where they had issue with. And so over the interim, we met with the Pollution Control Agency and the counties to try to identify a way that we could offer some more flexibility. And I'm really happy to be here this morning to let you know that we've come up with an agreement for a way to offer some of that flexibility. And there's also an offer that Pollution Control Agency made, and it's in a letter, and I'll let Mr. Kudelka explain that a little bit more, of some other non-statutory ways where we're going to be cooperating and increasing our communications with the Pollution Control Agency on this SSTS program. Let's see. We also plan on using the septic system in implementation and enforcement task force to increase our communications and get some other questions answered, and as well as the SSTS advisory committee to vet some other issues that don't necessarily need to be changed in statute. But we feel that this change will offer counties the flexibility that they'll find useful when adopting their ordinances.
Thank you. Questions, members? Thank you. I'm sorry, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Garlitz, I'm assuming that in the implementation of the rule, there have been some counties that have implemented the rule as it is. So how do they feel about this change if they've already gone forward and implemented the rule?
Ms. Garlitz.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, I did hear from some of those counties, and this change doesn't necessarily have to impact them. They could take advantage of this change and the flexibility that it offers, but the thing that AMC wanted to focus on is that we didn't want to adversely impact the counties who had already adopted the ordinances. So I've heard from some of them. They were wondering, you know, some of them asked, well, we really like this flexibility. Why wasn't this offered before? But AMC tried to work hard on a solution that wouldn't impact the counties. I think there's about 36 that have already adopted.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, could you, Ms. Garlitz, could we see the counties that have adopted it and maybe those dates of adoption? Do you have a list or anything? And then the other counties that are not?
Ms. Garlett.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I will I'll work with Ms. Sable at the Pollution Control Agency to get that to you. I don't know if the dates are there, but I do have a list of the counties who have adopted. We can.
Thank you.
We'll work on that getting.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Garlett, we have a huge outstanding backlog of systems that need to be upgraded and neighbors that are being unduly impacted by systems that aren't working. It's a very unneighborly thing to do, but we haven't really solved that problem. What kind of timeline now do you think we have for getting all of the timeline are you all on for now getting the job done of having all these non-compliant systems compliant?
Ms. Garland.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, right now this bill is just for, as you know, for the ordinance that counties need to adopt, and we did want to offer that flexibility under the old ordinance and under the old rules and the new rules. People with surfacing systems and illegally discharging, those have always been, as you noted, non-compliant. Counties are working on doing inventories. There's a number of grants that are out there through the Clean Water Legacy dollars that counties are able to apply for to try to increase the activities that they've made. I'm not certain the timeline for each and every county, but I do know through a variety of permits, through a number of activities that counties are participating in, whether it's lake surveys, different counties are doing different things on the timeline that they can afford with the staff people that they have. And I'm sorry, I can't give you a specific time for each of those counties.
Follow up, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. It's lovely to use the word flexibility, but that gives us no outcomes. What we are about is getting the job done. So it seems to me that we need to have, both from the counties and from PCA, a chart that says this is, that we can look at all the counties, and maybe PCA has this. We can look at each county, exactly what's happening in each county. In fact, it should be on the website, and a timeline where the counties are actually getting the job done. Because one of the things that I have sensed is that it is the scofflaws among counties that don't know how to get the job done, that always want flexibility and procrastination. And so now we've got procrastination and flexibility. Now what's going to happen? So are we getting the job done, or are we just going to not get the job done?
Ms. Garland.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, right now counties are enforcing their existing ordinances, which don't allow for illegal discharge and don't allow for surfacing systems and threats to imminent public health. We have ordinances on the books right now that don't allow for that, and we are working towards addressing those systems. The flexibility that we need is the flexibility in some of the pieces of the new rule that made these systems more expensive potentially to people that are putting them in, and more expensive for enforcement and administration for the county. So we're hoping that with allowing this flexibility, they will be able to spend more time and more work with the residents when they install those systems and enforcing other parts of the program.
Representative Wagenius.
I think neighbors want more than hope. They actually want some getting the job done. I'll talk to PCA after they present. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, is this bill repealing the 2008 rules or essentially nullifying the 2008 rule?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It really does not, in my understanding, it does not repeal those rules, but it does allow counties the flexibility to use either those rules for the 2006 rules.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so Representative Torkelson, so then we go back to 2006, or maybe they could use 2008 if they wanted to. Is that right?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen and members, this is an agreement between the counties and PCA. I think we should hear from PCA. They are the experts in this area. I don't profess to be the expert on SSTS standards. This compromise, I believe, is one that will allow folks to get their systems upgraded in a timely, in a more timely and more cost-efficient fashion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Kadelka, so it looks like this is affecting the changes that were put into rule in 08 in shoreland areas, which may be areas with more coarse textured soil and have the ability of water to move more greatly. So why does the agency support turning back the clock to 06 rather than keeping it moving forward?
Welcome, Mr. Kadelka. If you could identify yourself for the record, answer Representative Hansen's question, and then any other comments you have.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I'll go through real quick some of the changes and how they affect 2006 versus 2008 rules and in the process answer Representative Hansen's question. As Ms. Garlitz had mentioned, AMC, along with Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the Minnesota Association of County Planning and Zoning Administrators, PISA, have been working since the end of last session on ways to implement local ordinances with the 2008 rules. And one of the things that there were a number of discussions on in the 2006 rules and the 2008 rules was allowance for alternative local standards. And when just looking into that issue, alternative local standards were allowed for areas outside of the shoreline areas. And so that's what the bill does. And one of the three items that between the agreement between the MPCA and AMC is how alternative local standards are used in shoreland areas. And this gets to Representative Hansen's question. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency believes that alternative local standards with certain restrictions can be used in shoreland areas to still protect public health and the environment and our water quality. And that's mentioned on this January 19th letter, which is in the packet. It's that first bullet point. What it does is allow for residential systems under 2,500 gallons, which are most folks' systems at their homes, or something that's hooked up to a cluster system of eight or less. And so they would be allowed to use the 2006 code for those if there's a requirement of a 3-foot separation between where the water comes out and in the water table. So this is between the drain pipe out to the water table. This is different from what some alternative local standards are used in non-shoreland areas. This is more protective in the shoreland areas than what's allowed in other areas. The other restrictions are, too, is that this would only apply in cases with normal strength waste coming out. A large change in the 2008 rules centered on those systems more than 2,500 gallons per day because of the heavy amount of flow. There's advanced designs in those systems, and systems, for instance, food, beverage, and lodging facilities that have stronger waste. Those protections are still in the bill, are still in the 2008 rules. Those are still what the counties need to do. That is where the greatest gain and the greatest protection was made in the 2008 rules. This change will only allow, under certain restrictions, the 2006 rules, with those, again, restrictions of a 3-foot separation and that they have to be under a certain size and a regular residential strength of waste. So that's the change from why MPCA feels that this is still something that protects the environment. There are restrictions on this. We actually anticipate most counties will pick and choose from the 2008 rules to allow for advanced design systems, pretreatment systems in shoreland areas so that the work is done within the tank itself instead of the drain field, which would allow a little bit more flexibility for home users. That is allowed in the 2008 rules. Those are some of the benefits of the 2008 rules, allowing flexibility for homeowners while still adding protection for the environment. The two other changes that will be made in the program, which are not included in the bill. That last time I just talked about is what the bill discusses, is some of the changes on how we'll be doing training and also the work for counties on those systems larger than 2,500 gallons. Last year there was discussion about the amount of resources counties needed to permit systems over 2,500 gallons. There was a discussion about 30 or so a year across the state, which means some counties would see these every 4 or 5 years. So what the proposal is for MPCA to create a master contract. The county would still be the permitting authority. They would go to the master contract, which has a private or public individual on the contract. Some counties have made the choice already to have these folks on staff because they have heavy numbers of these. The county uses that person. They do the work to certify the system, and the bill comes to the state using clean water funds that the state had, that the PCA had received for SSDS activities. We'll also be adding a third license for designers and inspections, one that focuses that goes under 2,500 gallons, but have some of those pre-treatment and advanced designs. This will allow for counties to do some of those systems in-house with less resources needing to be put towards that. It'll still provide them with the education, the expertise they need to allow those advanced design systems in a shoreland or for food and beverage lodging facilities that are under 2,500 gallons. The third item is dealing with training. Since there will be some counties that will use the 2006 for the individual systems, the MPCA will work with the University of Minnesota and the advisory group that works on education issues. If a model ordinance for alternative local standards identified will help teach to that also, so the counties and individuals have the expertise they need. We cannot teach to every county ordinance because they are different. That's what it is under the current system, and that's what it was pre-2008. Counties do have flexibility to go above and beyond what the state rules are, so not every county is exactly the same already. So even under the current situation, we can't teach to every ordinance because they are each tailored to each county's needs. That's a brief description of what is the proposal between AMC and PCA on moving forward, bring closure to the 2008 rule discussion. The second letter for handout is just a little bit of a brief description in plainer English of what the bill does, including a chart on where various rules are covered.
Follow up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I understand about the larger volume in the shoreline, but the reason we have greater protections in the shoreline areas is because of the proximity to water. So if you have a lot of homes with poorer systems, you could impact the lake or the river or the stream. I don't know how good of a model this is for regulation, where the counties that adopt early, that take the lead and follow the rules, come into compliance, and then the other counties first want delays and then they want flexibility. I think, Mr. Kudelka, you said now they'll get funding that will be giving them the Clean Water Fund money, the legacy money, to be upgrading their systems. So could you correct me on that, Mr. Kudelka? Did you say that they would be getting clean water money?
Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, under the current system prior to this enactment of this bill, if it is enacted, counties get dollars right now to run their county programs. So a very small portion of that is from the General Fund Environmental Fund, but a large portion last year was from the Clean Water Fund to go to those activities. An additional amount of money was given to Bowser and the MPCA to do some of work. That money will be used on the master contract. That will be open to anyone. Those counties that have adopted their ordinances, if they so choose to use this system, can also, the master contract can use it, or those who have yet to adopt. The way it is designed is so that no matter where the county is, they'll be treated the same in the access to these dollars for the system larger than 2,500 gallons.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so Mr. Kudelka, I thought we had restrictions on the requirements that they may be needed where there's imminent public health. Is that still there or is that gone?
Mr. Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, there are really three different types of funds that go from the Clean Water Fund and the other general environmental fund for SSPS activities. One is those county grants going to run their programs. Second amount is for challenge grants, which are used for counties and other local jurisdictions to go out and do inspections and other type of inventory activities. And those are run through Bowser. A third type is for dollars to go to fix systems that are in need and repair, which you're talking about, the imminent threats to public health or others on need-based assistance. And so those are the three types of funds. So there is all those levels of funding. There are still dollars made available. This is not taking dollars that will go to clean up or fix systems that are right now underperforming or don't follow the law. This is additional dollars that will be used for the master contract.
Follow up. Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kadalka, when you looked at these alternative rules and you tested for the outcomes for the shoreline and stuff getting in the water, what was the difference between bacteria getting into the water and viruses getting into the water?
Mr. Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I don't have available to me right now that information, what you're asking for testing coming out of the pipes into the drain fields of various type of components. I don't have that information. I'll have to get back to you unless, but we don't have that available right now.
Well, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We once understood that bacteria were problems. But now we understand that viruses are problems, so it would be important to know if these new rules are protective of viruses not getting into water as well as bacteria not getting into the water. So, yes, we should know that, and we should know that before this bill comes up for passage on the floor. If I could follow up with a different question.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you. Ms. Garlitz, we need I'm not sure that these rules are protective enough because we haven't seen any science. We've seen what we hear is a compromise, but not science. And that's kind of meaningless. So once we've seen the science, and the science tells us that these rules are protective of our lakes in particular, because that's where the shoreline thing. What schedule do you expect that we can we expect from counties, or are we just going to see more foot dragging? What's going to be the outcome of these rules? Is there going to be any good outcome?
Ms. Garlitz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius. Right now, counties have until 2014 to adopt their new ordinances based on either these alternative local standards or on the new rule, or kind of picking and choosing and doing an assortment kind of tools from the toolbox of various options for their ordinances. I do not anticipate that AMC is going to come forward. We like the proposal. We think that it gives us flexibility for not only county ordinances but for residents. And counties have until 2014 to adopt their new ordinances.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you. Since there is a change and there's flexibility, will counties be using any science to determine which of these rules to use, or will it all be just politics?
Ms. Gutz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, each county has the ability to develop their own ordinance. We rely on the Pollution Control Agency to set minimum standards to protect the environment as part of their rulemaking. And so we rely on what the Pollution Control Agency has identified as what's proper in an ordinance to protect the environment. They review our ordinances. They let us know if there's problems with them. So we really do rely on the Pollution Control Agency and work with them to have the best ordinance for the workable, the soil conditions, the areas, the shoreland areas in each county, because they are so different. They will be different. The ordinances will be different in each county to protect the environment in each area.
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you. Well, I look forward to seeing the science that tells us about how viruses will react with these new rules. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank those that have brought this bill forward. Ever since I've been here, this has been a real source of concern among counties and people that want to do the right thing and to do it in a manner that's efficient and does a job. So if this, in fact, gives us agreement and compromise among the PCA and counties, I want to say thank you and let's move this forward.
Anything else? Representative Torkelson, would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to reiterate the good parts of this bill, the recognition that all septic systems are not created equal. There's differences in size and volume. There's differences in soil conditions. And this bill allows us some flexibility to recognize those different parameters that exist out there. It also allows us to utilize new technology that's available. We've seen new septic system designs that have come on board recently that allow for smaller footprints in active systems. I think this is good work. I'm happy to carry the bill, and I renew my motion that House File 2634 be passed and moved on to government ops.
Representative Torkelson renews his motion to move the bill to GovOps. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same. The bill is carried. We're going to be in recess for a few minutes, folks, at the call of the chair. They've got a couple of things they're working on with regards to the next bill, so stick around.
Let's reconvene. We'll bring the Environment, Energy, Natural Resources Committee back to order. Next, we'd like to hear House File 2214. Representative Hancock is the normally non-controversial lands bill. As usually happens, there's a little bit of controversy around it, so we're trying to work through those. Representative Hancock, I believe your motion is to go to the General Register. We will check with Ways and Means to confirm that they don't want to hear it. So if for some reason Ways and Means let us know that they want to hear it, we will send you through Ways and Means. But at this point, I believe, or it will be on to the General Register. Representative Hancock, if you'd want to make a motion, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move House File 2214, recommending it to be passed and sent to the General Register. And with your indulgence, I do have a DE1 amendment to get it in the shape that I would like, also move with your permission.
Representative Hancock moves the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted to the DE1, or to your bill as amended with the DE1. Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, before you today is the 2012 lands bill. It contains numerous bills brought forth by many of our individual members, including Representatives Dale Draskowski, Ansel, Falk, Demure, Creasel, Rukavina, and Pepin. It also contains land sales brought forth by the DNR. With me today is Kathy Lewis, the Assistant Director of the Lands and Minerals Division of the DNR. And with your permission, I would ask her to walk through the bill with us and give us the background on each of these land sales.
Welcome, Ms. Lewis. Why don't you walk us through the bill and the different parts of it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Kathy Lewis, Lands Minerals, DNR.
The bill before you is a combined DNR provisions and tax forfeited land sale bills. There's seven sections from the DNR. The first section is from the DNR, and it's two minor deletions from state parks. We're deleting lands from interstate state parks so we can proceed with the land exchange with the city of Taylor's Falls. We're also deleting land from McCarthy Beach State Park to allow a direct sale due to a trespass. Section 2 adds lands to Greenleaf State Recreation Area and Iron Range OHV State Recreation Area. The addition to Greenleaf is along the western shore of the lake. The addition to Iron Range OHV is to address small gaps in ownership. In both these cases, we would have to do an acquisition process to actually add the lands into the state ownership. Section 3 deletes lands from the Iron Range OHV State Recreation Area. We're deleting some boundary area that's not state land currently, and we've decided it will never be used for the OHV. We're also deleting 320 acres of school trust land that will not be used for the OHV park. Sections 4 and 5 concern Fond du Lac State Park and Nemadji State Forest and Nemadji State Forest. We're basically switching the lands from one forest to the other based upon ecological considerations. It will also simplify our planning process and in the subsection forest management plan process. But the legislature needs to make the change of forestry boundaries. Skipping ahead to the last two sections that affect DNR, and then I'll come back to the rest. Section 8 is authorizing a direct sale in Dakota County. It's the former Black Dog Preserve Scientific and Natural Area. This SNA has been de-designated. The SNA quality of the site has disappeared due to hydrological changes and the growth of invasive species, and the transfer will be to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They will maintain the public recreational use. They will maintain a trail through the city park. They will provide for natural resource management, and they will identify opportunities to restore the ecology. And the last section that's from the DNR is Section 18. It's a small sale in St. Louis County to resolve the trespass. The remainder of the bill comes as indicated from various representatives for the sale of tax forfeited land. And each of these bills have been reviewed by the Department of Natural Resources. In a few cases, we had corrections to legal descriptions, some corrections to statutory sites. In one case, we asked for a road easement in connection with Puget-Sound County, and those changes have been incorporated into the amendment that you see before you. The DNR has no concerns regarding the remainder of the bill. We are aware that in Section 22, which is St. Louis County, the City of Virginia sale, there may be some concerns from the county that they may want to speak to. But that's the heart of the bill, Mr. Chair. If there's more questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Ms. Lewis, did you do a calculation on the net acquisition sale of land? Do you know the net to the state of Minnesota in this bill?
Mr. Chair, members, we don't look at the tax forfeit one for the that portion. We're actually removing more land from the boundaries of areas than we are adding to the land, and the actual bill itself doesn't appropriate money for any acquisition. That would be in a separate activity. So but we're actually removing more land from boundaries than adding them to them.
So, Ms. Lewis, this bill reduces the size of the land ownership of the state of Minnesota. Would that be the future, some of it's not currently, and you're actually reducing it for boundaries, so you won't try and buy that land, I guess is one way to put it. So this bill does not increase the amount of land that the state owns.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The two small sales are very small acreage, but they are reducing our land base.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I believe, Ms. Lewis, you're talking in Section 3 about deleting a half section of land, school trust land. What's going to happen to that land?
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, members, the The school trust land is remaining there as school trust land, and we continue to look at opportunities to generate revenue from that property. It's not part of the OHV park is what the bill does to remove from the OHV park.
To that point, Ms. Lewis, is it currently forested or is it a brownfield site?
Members, Mr. Chair, members, it is in an area that is, if you think of the Virginia area and there's a dip in the iron formation, it is an area that there's there is some trees. It's not a heavily forested site. When I walked the area, there's a railroad that runs through there. There's some industry. There's also some non-ferrous metallic mineral exploration going on in that area of the state, too. So it's, but it's not heavily forested.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lewis, just tell us a little bit more about, you're transferring some land to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Black Dog. Could you just tell us just a little bit more about that?
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, this is about 30 acres that's located in Dakota County, and what it is it's been a site that's been managed as the Black Dog Preserve Scientific and Natural Area. As we look at our sites, we identified that due to changes in the water patterns and also invasive species, it does not fit the criteria under statutes as a scientific and natural area. There's also been a pattern in here that some of the property has been a leasing situation where the leases have terminated, and so that what we're looking at is this piece of property is not being meet the criteria of a scientific and natural area, but it would be appropriate to maintain it in public ownership. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has the commitment to maintain in public ownership and maintain the public access to it, but it won't be managed as a scientific and natural area. It will be managed as an area protected for public use, but not meeting the criteria.
Representative Wagenius.
So this was once a scientific and natural area, Ms. Lewis?
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, yes, it was. It was. The designation was removed by commissioner's order at the end of last year because it did not meet the criteria any longer.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I just want to follow up on that, if you will, Mr. Chairman, in a couple of ways. If it's not scientific and natural because of invasive species, that almost says to me that we were not managing it in a way that we needed to manage it. Is that the issue here? Did we not have enough money to manage it?
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I think there's a combination of factors, and I don't have all the details to answer your question, but I think it is a combination of, yes, there's been invasive species, but there's also hydrology impacts and assessment of the quality of the property by the department and looking at the site. We can get you more details by talking to the actual managers. That would be helpful.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would worry that we would have scientific and natural areas that are not managed well and that then they're no longer scientific and natural areas. But I have another question about this, that we are giving this to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And Mr. Chairman, that, I think that is a discussion for this committee. I mean, I don't have any dog in the fight of this particular piece of land, but we have had this kind of underlying assumption that if we give something to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, then it saves us money and it's fine to give public lands to the federal government. But we all know that the federal government doesn't have much money either. In fact, they're in far worse shape than we are financially. And so as we pursue this route of giving lands to the federal government, should we be looking at the issue of the long-term financial ability to manage these lands? I mean, I think that's a discussion that we as it's not a partisan discussion that we just should have as this committee sometime down the road. Would that be all right with you, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, I think that would be a good idea so we could understand this. And Ms. Lewis, we may possibly have to lay this bill over for some other issues on it and take it up tomorrow. I'm wondering if you also could make available to us either way electronically a map of the area and show how it fits with the my understanding it would become part of the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge. I'm assuming they're immediately adjoining it. So if you could make available a map to Ms. Zipko and she could send it out to the committee, that would be helpful. Representative Wagenius, and then I'll go to Representative Drazkowski to this point. But first, Representative Wagenius.
Oh, well, if it's on this point, I have another question that's not on point.
To this point, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lewis, I'm just curious, could this land be a candidate for private sale? And if no, why not?
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, it is adjacent to the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge. It seems like it's appropriate to be having it maintained for public use. I can't tell you off the top of my head. I can go back and review the file. It may have issues with flooding and floodplain and zoning restrictions, but I can't say for sure. I have to go back and review the file on that to see if it would be buildable. That was not a recommendation from our staff to put it into private ownership. It was to maintain it for the public use.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Representative Drazkowski.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you, Ms. Lewis and Mr. Chair.
To this point, Representative Fabian.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lewis, what would be the possibility of giving the land to the county instead of the federal government? I mean, is that an option? Thank you.
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, the discussions have, because it's the adjacent owner is the United States, it seems the logical party to address it to. I can go back and check with our managers to see if they talk to the county for interest, but I don't know if they have.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just looking at these, another subject, looking at these additions to state recreation areas and curious if they meet the criteria of being important under the study that we are getting ready to do or have DNR do in the
of
this bill.
Is that a question for Ms. Lewis?
It's a question for the chair. Who's carrying the bill?
I think that we'll get some good information from the DNR and the study they're going to bring forward for us for next year. To the lands bill, any additional questions? Thank you, Ms. Lewis, for running through the non-controversial part. Representative Hancock, I would like to bring up Representative Rukavina. Representative Dill, you had an amendment on why don't we move your amendment, Representative Dill, while we get ready, and if you could explain it. Does it need to be passed out, Representative Dill, or do the members have it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It has been passed out to the members.
Oh, it's the one members that's on the 8x11. Representative Dill, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My amendment would be to amend House File 2022 into House File 2214, the Hancock bill. 2022 is the nursing home bill that I presented on the House floor last week. It passed the House, I think, 130-0. Maybe it was 129. I don't remember. But there was no objection. It also passed the Senate the same way. I'm just trying to tuck it into another bill for safekeeping, the total intent of the amendment.
Discussion to Representative Dill's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, that amendment's adopted to the bill. Representative Rukavina, you have a provision in this bill. Representative Rukavina, do you have the bill to tell us which section it's in?
Mr. Chair, I do not. I apologize.
It's Representative Rukavina, it's section 22. Representative Rukavina, to your part of the bill, welcome to the committee again.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Well, yeah, I had a bill dealing, I'm passing on a map, Mr. Chair. You informed me that you thought this might be controversial, but in my eyes, it's not controversial, so I just appreciate the support of the committee.
Representative Rukavina, you bring a lot of things forward that you think are non-controversial, and sometimes it becomes controversial, including this issue today, this morning. Mr. Representative Rukavina, welcome.
Mr. Chair and members, if you look at the map I'm passing out, in the top center of the map, there's an outlined G piece of property, for lack of a better word, 90-195-205. The business owner who fabricates equipment for power plants in North Dakota for mining and excavating equipment in Canada and all across the UP and across the Iron Range wanted to put a paint shop alongside of the one building you can see that just skirts that J. So he had asked me about doing it last fall. It's about 10 more jobs on the range, and he's currently has to job out a lot of his painting because the only time he can put this high-pressure paint on a lot of this equipment is when it's a sunny day in the middle of the summer. You know, up north, Mr. Chair, as you know, we don't have that many nice days. So he wanted to get this piece of tax forfeit property. Well, and the one below it there, that triangle where it's 90-180-772. Well, what happened is the county land department told the city of Virginia they had to take, because the city of Virginia inquired about it, that they had to take the entire site. That site in that building you see there with the parcel code 90-180-775 is an old foundry that was in business until I believe about 3 years ago in Virginia for over 120 years making foundry part or casting parts for all over the country, and a lot of your light poles in your cities might have been cast there. Equipment for the mines, it went bankrupt. The county currently has the responsibility to tear down that building, but for some reason they want the city to take the whole parcel. And I know the reason, Mr. Chair. It's because there's probably, who knows, $500,000, $1 million liability to tear down that building and clean up what might be found underneath it. I don't want to put that burden on the 9,000 people I represent in the city of Virginia. So we've been trying to deal with the county, and finally I think we've come up with a deal that, you know, again, isn't controversial, at least in my eyes, and I think we've got the support of the county and lobbyists is here, but let's just get the G piece of property for now. And I've got an appraisal by the city of Virginia here for $19,389, so I'll even round up to 20, Mr. Chair, and I think we've got an agreement with, at least with the county land commissioner, who is not an elected official, but sometimes likes to act as he is, for that number. So with that, Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Ungaro can confirm what I said.
Welcome, Mr. Ungaro. Do you have any comments additionally to Representative Rukavina's testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. John Ungaro, Intergovernmental Relations Director for St. Louis County. Representative Rukavina and I did just speak with the county land commissioner, and Representative Rukavina proposed that rather than deal with all seven parcels on the 7.5-acre total site, just to deal with that one piece, that J piece, dash 205, and go with the appraised value that the city of Virginia has it on the books, quite honestly. That's the assessed value. The appraised value is almost double that, but our land commissioner did agree that it was reasonable to reduce some of that because of some of these other issues surrounding those properties, such as the cleanup, etc., that may have to occur on some of those lands. So that is, I guess, the short-term solution, and Representative Rukavina is proposing that those remaining seven lots and the building itself, where the six lots, and the building where the foundry, the land where the foundry actually sits on, that be dealt with at a later date, because that's not a pressing issue right now for either the city of the Virginia or the county. What is the pressing issue is the fact that we have an adjacent landowner here who has a major contract to supply the steel to SR Steel for their new taconite plant, and that was the impetus for this whole issue to begin with, was to try to get some property to that individual so that he could put a paint shop up on that land by this spring. So that is the solution that we're talking about short term. Obviously, we still have the issue about what to do with that building that's sitting on tax forfeited property, that foundry, and the teardown cost and the disposal of that demolition debris. But from an immediate standpoint, this is something which my land commissioner anyways thinks is doable.
Thank you, Mr. Arnarvo. Questions, members? Well, Representative Rukavina, as you and I know, we just had a discussion about my tour of Virginia. I can't remember. It was when I was working on building my deer stands, and I happened to be coming back to meet my wife or whatever, and tried to find a place to go to Mass on a Sunday morning in Virginia, and truthfully, I never did find it. So I hope the guy upstairs gives me a break, because I can't remember if I got home in time to go that night when they have evening Mass or not. But all I got was depressed driving around your town and seeing all the abandoned buildings. And you're telling me you've got somebody here who wants to expand and grow and turn some tax-forfeited land into productive land. And I would agree with you. It sounds like a reasonable plan to not deal with the former foundry site and how that could potentially cripple the city of Virginia and deal with that issue at a later time. But at the same point, on one hand, you've got an appraisal potentially higher, and we're going to be dealing with an issue similar to this later where we have land assessed values and appraisal values that may be quite a bit different. And I guess I would encourage you, it sounds like you're working with the land commissioner and you need to get the city involved, I think seems like, who's got to get involved here, because they're going to be on the hook. And it sounds like folks should want to work with this adjoining business owner and let them expand and grow jobs. So I would encourage you, we've got it in the bill the way it is. It sounds like you might need a few hours. Why don't we just deal with it tomorrow morning back in this committee? Unless members have additional questions, I would like to see if we could get the city. The issue right now is between the city and the county. Would that be true? You're not quite in agreement in the price of what it would say in this bill. I'd rather get it done here than on the House floor, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, first of all, I want to thank you for your, you know, counseling and mediation services, and thank your wonderful committee chair for putting this in the bill for me in the first place. So that being said, you know, what I'm worried about is, as you said, the entire range has a lot of abandoned homes, has a lot of blight. The city of Virginia had an opportunity here to help a business grow a few more jobs, a good business, I might add, and a good business person. And but, you know, they kind of got bullied into accepting this brownfield site, which they never wanted in the first place. It's not the responsibility, I don't think, of the 9,000 citizens of Virginia to take on that responsibility. That is currently the responsibility of the county board and land department to figure out what to do with this abandoned site. So right now we can move on by just putting the J piece of property in the land bill and creating 5, 6, 8 more jobs, and then we'll have to deal, and the city will deal with the county on the rest of that parcel. But their initial request was just for that piece and the triangle below it, and so, you know, this kind of accomplishes that.
Well, Representative Rukavina, I like your idea of trying to find, I don't know that there's agreement between the parties on what the price should be at, and that's what we need to get resolved. Representative Deal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rukavina and Mr. Angaro, who on the J part that we're talking about that's in the bill, how will the potential cleanup and remediation follow along with that? Will the new owner of the tax forfeit land, if the bill passes, then be responsible for a cleanup that might occur on that piece of property. It looks somewhat distant from the boundary. But if there are implications there, who's going to, is the county or going to maintain the cleanup? How is that going to work?
Representative Rucavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, the way this is drafted, it's drafted to the City of Virginia. So the City of Virginia will be responsible, and that's the issue on the whole parcel. Is the responsibility gets turned over to the city then. But on this particular piece of property, there was just steel in that and not much use. So I'm confident. There's obviously no building demolition costs, and I'm confident that there's not any real pollution issues on that particular piece.
Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rucavina, is that zone commercial at this time, or...
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Rucavina.
So it's zone commercial industrial property. Old industrial. It was an old industrial foundry.
Representative Purcell.
The J parcel.
Right. The entire 7 acres there is 7.1 acres.
Representative Purcell.
But it's not anticipated that there is any cleanup necessary in that J parcel.
Representative Rucavina.
Mr. Chair, I'm hoping not. I don't believe there is.
Mr. Chair and
Mr. Anarga.
For your information, we did have the EPA out on the site last fall. They spent about 3 weeks there, and they did do a report. They did find some pollution. It has been cleaned up. So we're hoping that there isn't additional pollution there. But, I mean, you know, it's a big site. They did three different test borings on the site and only found minimal pollution, but the one area that still is of possible concern is perhaps some petroleum pollution that is on the land. They weren't 100% certain in their report that there wasn't some petroleum pollution there, and they were still examining that. Otherwise, the other pollution that was identified there has been cleaned up.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Testify. You said EPA. Did you mean MPC or did you mean U.S. EPA?
U.S. Mr. Ongaro.
Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell, it was the U.S. EPA.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so potentially the cleanup would proceed as a brownfield. Is that being considered at all of this area?
Mr. Ongaro.
Mr. Chair, if I could take that, I think there were...
Representative Rucavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there were some mentions of some possible funding, if there are any cleanup issues, correct me if I'm wrong, through the EPA, but, you know, who knows, once you start tearing down a building, what you're going to find there, and that's my concern. And, you know, I'm more than willing to have the City of Virginia pay $150,000 for this industrial site if the county accepts the responsibility of demoing the building and any other pollution concerns, but they haven't agreed to that yet. And you kind of suggested that, Mr. Chair, and they're probably not going to agree to it because they know what the potential might be. But again, I have to reiterate, it is their responsibility right now, not the responsibility of 9,000 people who've been kind of hit really hard with LGA cuts and everything else. They don't need another $100, $200 bill on their property taxes as opposed to the county being able to spread that over, 15 times more people.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just would, I believe, agree with what I heard from the chair that I'm happy to see a jobs bill coming through here and hope it makes a way to the floor.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Rucavina, if I could just sum up, it sounds like possibly this has two possible directions. One would be that we only deal with the J-shaped tax forfeited land and determine a price that seems to be more acceptable, and the cleanup then would become the responsibility of the city, I believe, if I understand you correctly. A bigger picture possibly that you may be considering before tomorrow morning would be as if the county is interested in and the city is willing to take on the entire part, that there would have to be some additional discussion about how the brownfield site would be taken care of. And that's a bigger issue, but maybe you can get that one resolved in the next few hours or before tomorrow morning.
Mr. Chair.
So, Representative Rucavina.
Mr. Chair, I think your first interpretation of what's going to happen is the correct one, that we can just go for the J piece and agree to that. And the gentleman that, you know, first requested this property, the city can decide what they're going to sell it to him for if we put a price in there, and then the whole other issue of the rest of that can be figured out at a later date. Maybe when you and I are dead or I'm in the nursing home, I don't know.
Representative Rukavina, the entrepreneur does not have a need for the entire site.
He never wanted it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ungaro, you piqued my interest. We had our EPA out to your site for 3 weeks. I'm curious how many people they brought, and we've got a federal government that's $15.3 trillion in debt. I assume they already cleaned up the brownfield site. Is that what happened?
Mr. Ungaro.
Mr. Chair and Representative Draskowski, I wasn't personally there to witness how many people were on site. I got the impression from the report that I did see that there was a handful, and they did interview some of the former employees that worked at the Staver Foundry and had them show them around the site. But as far as what was cleaned up based on the report, obviously if they spent 3 weeks there, that they had to cleaned up something other than, I mean, the facility itself isn't that big. So, I mean, to spend 3 weeks there, a handful of people there, there was some cleanup in the report. I can't give you an exact quantity of it, but there was a team there, so to speak.
Representative Draskowski.
Mr. Chair, another fine example of our government in action. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional, Representative Rukavina, we'll continue this discussion tomorrow after you have resolution. So is there any additional discussion to the rest of Representative Hancock's lands bill? Representative Hancock, I think we'll lay this bill over until tomorrow, and then we'll bring it back. I think the only issue before us at that point sounds like it will be the Section 22 dealing with St. Louis County. Members, tomorrow we will have our bonding recommendations before the committee and Representative Hancock's bill. Any other discussion? Members, we're adjourned. I'm sorry. Oh, that wasn't a hand. Members, we're adjourned.